Chapter 14.
So,
Droma waggled his mustachios.
She could have married royalty, and she took you instead?
Han backhanded his friend with a spoonful of synthetic stew, driving Droma backwards off his stool. Jason could barely stay awake. It had been an incredibly long day. Most of the Rin were laying out their sleeping pads. Rhonda was the first one out of quarantine after the sick list, he interrupted. Han stirred his stew and gave Droma the look Jason and Jaina had always called the stare. And Leia's people locked him up already.
Now what?
Droma asked. The usual. Tried to get outside the dome just to look at the ships. Just looking, Han repeated, as Droma clambered back onto his stool. Droma eyed his own bowl and spoon. Jason, suspecting the Rin was calculating range and elevation, slid his stool back. Jaina and Leia had processed through, too. Han had convinced Jaina he would need an outside liaison with the people who processed through, and someone to keep an eye on Rhonda. At that, Leia decided she'd cover her own job better outside than in here. She'd left Olmok in quarantine to assist with security. Jason took the news philosophically. He'd hoped his parents would spend a little more time together after so long. 23 Rin followed Jaina out, Han was saying. Leia found them flight suits, so at least they'll stay warm until the fuzz grows back. I thought they looked pretty good.
You would, Droma bristled. You're getting nearsighted.
Your mouth looks just as big as ever. Now Jason spotted the soft light in Han's eyes and a self-satisfied grin. Maybe his parents had found a few moments alone. In his opinion, they'd both made convenient use of their circumstances to keep from reuniting. There was something splendid about the universe when your mother and father loved each other. Someone ought to go back over to 32, he said, and get our belongings. The Rin smoothed his mustachios.
Possessions? They're just something to lose. I'm more interested in whether there are still space-worthy ships over there.
Yeah, Han said. Figure out how to get them here while you're at it. If we leave Gateway in a hurry, it won't be by crawler. Jason clenched his fists at the sight of 32's ruins. Synthplast scraps drooped between struts that arched like the ribs of a beast picked clean by carrion crawlers. Through those ribs, from a vantage near the remains of the entry gate, Jason could see rows of blue-roofed huts through what used to be the protective dome. Gateway's driver had donned a chem suit before bringing still-quarantined refugees on board. He shook his head.
Good thing you weren't in there when it started to breach.
His voice came filtered through the transparent faceplate. Actually, we were, Jason muttered. He stepped into the overalls of his own rebreather-equipped chem suit. Over them went an orange jacket, gloves attached. He worked his fingers down into the gloves, which didn't hamper his touch when he attached his soft helmet and anchored the clasps. Selkor must have gotten the suits from a military source, he reflected. Ready? He asked his team. Droma had slid into his orange suit. Netza, older and bulkier, struggled to bring hers over her head. Six other suited figures moved toward the crawler's hatch.
Scanning for life forms, the driver's assistant said.
He worked a few controls.
Negative in this line of sight, but be careful.
Jason hooked his lightsaber on the outside of his suit. Mutant Fefza beetles were the only creatures known to have survived the collapse of Duro's ecosystems. He led down the crawler's ramp. Each pair of the others pushed a repulsor cart. Their mission was simple: gather as many belongings as possible and get back before dark. Jason, nominally in charge, would help wherever he was needed. Then bring the Falcon over to Gateway
while Droma followed in 32's battered I-7 Howl Runner. He moved out with a pair of tall, thin Vors who had volunteered for a duty that was much more dangerous for them, with their twitchy lungs. They also had their pride, but they looked almost skeletal in orange chemsuits, except for the arms, plumped unnaturally by bunching their leathery wings into the sleeves. His insulated boots crunched on dead moths as he strode up the first lane. Evidently, Duro's atmosphere did kill them. They wouldn't spread overland to other domes. Grateful for one small blessing, he escorted the Vors to the first hut in their sector. They ducked inside while Jason stood guard, vaguely uneasy. Within minutes, the Vors emerged carrying armloads of clothing and other belongings. Jason helped bundle that load together, and then the Vors quietly pushed on to the next hut. Saving their breath, Jason guessed. They'd cleared several huts when Jason's comlink squealed.
"Solo!" Metz's voice barked. "Get over here!"
He sprinted back up the lane, searching the Rin section. Finally, he spotted a tethered repulsor cart. He shifted direction and headed toward it, gripping his lightsaber with his right hand so it wouldn't bounce against his hip bone. He plunged into the shelter. Two orange-suited forms had backed against its inside wall. Closer to Jason was an insect he'd seen only in hollows and nightmares. Fefza beetles, loosed on the planet's surface during the Duro's early days of space travel, had the odd quirk of both internal and external skeletons, so the mutant strain had been able to grow to enormous size. This one was well over a meter long, with segmented antennae waving toward him, sniffing through the Duro stench. Evidently it had taken this hut as a nest, because the crumpled wings of hundreds of white eyes lay along one half-eaten cot. Under iridescent wing covers, the beetle's soft abdomen was grossly distended. It had evidently gorged on White Eyes and the Rin's pitiful possessions. It was getting ready to lay eggs. Unfortunately, Metza and her partner had gotten past it before spotting it. They crouched against an interior wall, brandishing a cast-off shirt and a pair of leggings. Whenever the beetle's antennae twitched, they flapped the clothing. Jason drew and ignited his lightsaber. The beetle turned, working the air with two of its armored, pincer-footed legs. Green, blue, and purple light reflected off the iridescent grooves of its body, and its mouthparts, easily wide enough to grip a Rin leg, clicked ominously. "Load your pile and get out," Jason said.
"Kill it!"
Metz's voice hooted out of the nearer, bulkier chemsuit. Jason didn't turn his head. "Why? There are thousands of them all over the surface."
"Kill it!" she shrieked. "One beetle dead is 100 less next season. It's going to lay eggs."
Jason saw the sense in that. But the creature had no evil intent. It had found an excellent nesting spot, complete with food source, and he didn't want to kill needlessly. "Just load up the cart and move on," he told Metza. "I don't think she'll come after you."
"She?" Metza demanded. "So now it's a she?
Do males lay eggs?"
"Solo!" the comlink in his pocket shrieked. "We have trouble!"
He fingered it on as he raised it. "On my way," he said. Then to Metza, "Get your things and get out." He positioned himself between Metza and the clicking beetle until she'd cleared the hut. Then he backed out after her. The beetle didn't follow. Standing well out into the lane, he closed down his lightsaber and touched the comlink again. The cry, almost avian, had sounded like a Vor. Or was that just the distortion of breath masks and fluctuating reception? "Where are you?"
"Over here! On a roof!"
Grunting and whacking noises sounded over the link. He scrambled up a nearby shelter and balanced on top. About 20 meters away, two pudgy-armed orange figures, definitely Vors, stood on another blue roof, menaced from below by 5 iridescent beetles. Side by side, the orange figures flung someone else's heirlooms at the creatures. The huge insects ducked, then came on again, scrabbling against the rough wall, mouth parts clicking and sliding against each other like hand-length saws. Jason leapt down, not liking to think what would happen if the beetles climbed up and hold the Vor's chemsuits. This time he did have to kill. These creatures were attacking prey, not defending a nest. Half-stepping back into a fighting stance, he lit his lightsaber again. He'd never tried lightsaber fighting without using the Force. But how hard could it be? He asked himself, and he waded in Force-blind. These beetles, swarming toward fresh food, weren't about to back down. Jason swung the lightsaber through the nearest, slicing it between abdomen and thorax. It collapsed. Jason swung for another one's faceted eyes. 2 more beetles pivoted and came for him, leaving the hut's other side safe for the Vors.
"Back to the crawler!" Jason shouted. "Signal the others! We're leaving!"
The Vors scrambled down. One tried to grab their cart's handles. 2 beetles lunged for his loosely suited legs, snipping with their mouthparts. The Vor shrieked and ran after his partner. Another 6 beetles clambered over the dead ones. Jason swung the lightsaber wildly, keeping a circle clear around himself. Without drawing on the Force, his motions seemed jerky, disconnected. But he didn't stop. Another swarm reached him. On Yavin 4, he recalled, certain crushed or wounded insects gave off pheromones that called in more of their species. Whether or not this was the case here, something was drawing them toward him. 5 more scuttled closer, up another lane. Then an orange-suited form pelted into view.
"Get back!" Jason shouted.
The form waved a vibroblade.
"I'll clear you a path!"
That was Droma's voice. The Rin came on, slicing for the beetles' undersides, dancing out of the way of claws and mouthparts. They didn't seem nearly as interested in Droma as they were in Jason. The thought hit them both at the same instant. As Jason shouted,
"They're drawn to the light!"
Droma's voice echoed, and then finished,
"Saber!"
Now what? Jason sliced, backstepped, turned, and sliced again. The mindless creatures kept coming, waving their antennae. The comlink in his pocket whistled. Then a voice said,
"Solo! Everyone but you and Droma has gotten to the crawler! Run for it!"
"Shut off that glow light, Solo!" Droma shouted. "You're as crazy as your father!"
Shut down his lightsaber? Backstep. Swing. Beetles boiled over each other, some stopping to chew on the ones he'd killed. The biggest one yet, black antennae as thick as a Twi'lek's leku, sailed in over the others' backs. Jason sidestepped and sliced it in 2, but as he did, something sharp closed on his left ankle.
"Get to the Howl Runner!"
he shouted at Droma. Droma vaulted an iridescent abdomen and landed beside Jason. Breathing hard now, harder than a Jedi should for lightsaber work, Jason jabbed at the beetle who'd seized his ankle. As it fell away, he spotted a tiny tear in his orange pants leg.
"Throw the lightsaber!"
Droma crouched, brandishing his vibroblade.
"I'll cut us a way out. Then you can levitate it to you."
"You know I'm trying not to use the Force."
Swing, sidestep, jab.
"Fine, then leave it here. But throw it, or I will."
Jason locked his lightsaber on, flicked his wrist, and let go. As the lightsaber flew, he had another flashback to his vision of a lightsaber sailing off into the distance.
"Go!"
Droma grunted. The pack of beetles scuttled off after the glimmering lightsaber. Jason headed for the hydroponics tank, jumping over a beetle with every other step. Now the ominous Duro scent reached his nostrils. They'd breached his suit, all right. Droma slashed the antennae off one bug that got too close. They broke free of the swarm.
"This way,"
Jason led toward a long breach in the synthplas wall, instead of the gate. I left the I-7 close to the Falcon.
Right behind you, Droma called.
Jason pulled out his comlink. Crawler, this is Solo. Stick around till we can get airborne. Then he turned to look back. The mass of beetles boiled, an iridescent tumble of black antennae and wing covers. Somewhere in there was his lightsaber. If he left it behind, that would be like leaving a leg or a hand. But if he used the Force to call it to his hand, he'd break his own resolve again. Either way, he would be miserable. He had to decide, soon, whether to abandon the Force altogether or plunge back into its flow. This constant weighing and evaluating endangered others. He shut his eyes, willed the tiniest wisp of energy, and called the lightsaber. It rose out of the battling beetles in a low, shining arc to land solidly in his palm. He shut it down with a sigh. Droma stood staring at him.
"Hurts to watch you," he said.
"Because you know what I'm going through, I suppose," Jason answered. "If I use it, I'm miserable. If I don't, I'm sunk." The Rin nodded, then stepped out over the tattered remains of the dome.
"Come on, kid. Move."
Jason processed through decontamination the next afternoon and reported to the admin building. According to Leia's aide, Jaina was outdoors in Gateway's ship lot, helping an inspection team. Leia sat at the big Cellcor desk, ignoring an undertone of conversation between C-3PO and someone on the other end of a comlink. Something about spirograss, marshlands, and weather modification. Leia straightened her white head wrap.
"I'm glad you're here, Jason. A Corduro freighter we just offloaded is missing a third of its cargo. Think you could get anywhere with Corduro's administration?"
Jason gaped. "I haven't got much experience with negotiating." Leia shook her head.
"No, but you're a Solo, and that ought to impress them. I haven't got time to fly up to Buru. And your dad says you're trying to get more involved in non-Jedi activities. I can sympathize with that."
Her left cheek twitched.
"More than you know."
"I guess you probably can," Jason admitted. His mom would understand that not everyone who showed Jedi talent was destined to follow that path. She'd shown him that not every life had enough time for Jedi disciplines. He'd tried to tell his dad about his vision, and how it confirmed his decision to hold back. Han had turned away, shaking his head, confused.
"Want to try something new?"
Leia asked. Jason ran a hand over his strangely smooth head. "Droma just brought 32's Hal Runner over. I could take it up to Buru, see what I can do."
"I'd appreciate that. Be careful, Jason."
"Always, Mom."
"May the Force be with you. Anyway."
"You too." Rhonda Besadi Diori propelled himself up Gateway's main street, relieved to put the admin building, with its rough, dry detention cell and glaring lights, behind him. He'd tried to explain to Jedi Jaina Solo that he only wanted to evaluate Gateway's ships, but she was as self-righteous as her brother. So far, he'd evaded their mother. He passed a pair of shaved-down Rin, standing outside their tent wearing snug blue flight suits. Their vests and culottes hung limp over lumpy blue leggings. Even after he'd served his detention, which he had every intention of protesting after the fact, he had been temporarily excluded from the communication area, the one place where he finally could hope for decent transmission equipment. He must contact Borga. He would find a way to get off this drab, impoverished world and rejoin her. He wet his lips. He needed a pilot, of course. He still might convince the young Solo female. As his people said, where persuasion fails, bribery prevails. His Khajiitic had wealth on worlds the Yuuzhan Vong hadn't touched. The young Jedi must have a weakness. Jewels, shimmer silk, better yet, a ship of her own. Encouraged by his thoughts, he hurried up the sandy lane to the Selkor shelter he'd been issued, a miserable blue tent in Gateway's Teyana Ruins district. He could hear the continual grinding of Gateway's rock chewers underfoot. Pausing inside his door flap, he caught an odd odor. He clenched his little hands, furious at the intrusion. He snuffled, following the scent to his sleeping mat. He had used his flimsy bed covers as additional padding. Beneath them, he spotted an unfamiliar lump. Reaching around with his tail, he flicked off the covers. A leathery ball, not quite the size and shape of a human head, lay on the sleeping mat. It was a Yuuzhan Vong villip, like the ones he'd seen on board the cluster ship. Borga had come through for him quickly. Then he trembled from head to tail tip. Too quickly, actually. For this villip to show up in his dwelling so soon, the Yuuzhan Vong must have an agent inside the Gateway Dome, masquerading as human. An agent who now knew where to find him. Undaunted, Rhonda picked up the leathery creature and sank onto his rumpled mat. His plan, to lure key Yuuzhan Vong personnel here where the New Republic could trap them, still seemed ill-formed, but he had promised Borga he'd try to bargain. One Jedi for the world of Tatooine? The idea created an inner sensation he didn't quite understand, since he'd never experienced it before. A twinge of vague pain, as if this might not be an appropriate use of someone who wouldn't do this to him. Maybe this was what humans called guilt. He dismissed it. His loyalty was to Borga. Even if Jason wasn't using the Force, he wouldn't be taken easily. Rhonda stroked the villip, then set it down, wondering who would answer. While he waited, he sealed his door flaps. Gateway was too bright for his taste. Thinking of Nal Hutta and the painstaking planetary development that the Yuuzhan Vong were even now destroying made his eyes feel thick and pleasantly moist. Features appeared on the villip. A prominent brow ridge, splayed nubs of nose, cheeks with deep sacks under the eyes.
"Rhonda Besadi Diori," it said. "Finally, you report."
Rhonda didn't recognize the face's fiercely chiseled features or the imperious baritone voice. He tipped his head respectfully toward the villip.
"You have an advantage of knowledge on me, my lord."
"I am War Master Savang La. Can you truly offer a Jedi?"
"I can," he answered.
War Master? His feelers had brought in a prize catch. Now to lure him to Duro, for the New Republic to snatch.
"His name is..."
"Useless Hutt," the War Master said. "Your parent told me what you want in return. Know this. The Hutts betrayed us. Only exemplary service will win back our trust."
"I know and respect your caution, War Master. I remember, though, your kinsman's fascination with Worth Skidder, on board the slave ship with which I traveled too briefly. I would be pleased to deliver this Jedi to you. To you personally, War Master. As for my request, what use to you is Tatooine? A forsaken world, barely able to sustain life..."
The villip's rendition of the War Master's eyes looked like unfathomable black holes.
"Why?" he demanded.
Should I value your sense of honor enough to come personally to Duro?
This, Rhonda admitted, was the gaping hole in his net.
You would honor me deeply, he began, and be honored in return.
You, the War Master said, are not worthy of honor. Nevertheless, I will take this Jedi. Arrange to deliver him, and I will consider your request. Fail to deliver, or offer the slightest deceit, and I shall flay the hide from your body with my kufi.
The villip softened, its features retracted, and Rhonda was left to wonder what he had done. The alien's agent here in Gateway could grab Jason, or stab Rhonda in his sleep. Had he just made a terrible mistake? Was there really any way he could hand Jason over? Surely the young Jedi would come to his senses, sweep out his lightsaber, and fight back. What Rhonda really needed, then, was an extra layer of defense. Duro was protected by one cruiser, a few snub fighters, and the orbital city's planetary shields, which also protected whatever was immediately below them on the surface. If the New Republic brought an additional battlegroup closer to Duro, Rhonda would be defended. The bargain would have to be canceled. He burst out of his shelter, headed back to the admin building. There he found two communication techs, a human and a small toothy Tinnan, talking to a half-size hollow of a magnificent dark-haired woman. Elated by his good fortune, he muscled the furry Tinnan aside.
"Senator Shesh," he gasped, "I have discovered a traitor on Duro. The Yuuzhan Vong have planted an agent here. Surely a scout for a future invasion. You must double our defenses, or all these refugees surely will die. You are in a position to send help from the military. Send it quickly."
Senator Vicky Shesh turned her head slightly away.
"Haven't we spoken once before, sir?"
He bowed deeply.
"I am Rhonda Besadi Diori, and..."
"You say you have unmasked a Yuuzhan Vong agent inside the Gateway Dome?"
"Not unmasked," he said boldly, "but discovered irrefutable evidence of his presence."
"Then we thank you, Rhonda Besadi Diori. Deliver your evidence to Gateway's administrator, Ambassador Organa Solo. I have just been apprised of her presence. Her security force will investigate."
"I thank you for your time and attention, Senator. Here again are the people with whom you were conversing."
Rhonda swaggered out of the building. He would do just as the senator suggested. Give Leia Organa Solo the villip and let her deal with it. His prompt action, realizing he'd made a mistake, had just saved him, and maybe Gateway itself, from a grim fate. How clever he was. Senator Vicky Shesh of Kuat shut down the holoprojector and reached for her maggot-textured villip. This would not wait. Business, like diplomacy, required making concessions, and she had no qualms about reporting one young Hutt's treachery. She stroked the repulsive alien object, detaching her attention from her right hand by eyeing the curtained wall across from her private office's comm unit. Her servants swept those curtains three times daily for listening devices. Sometimes they neglected to straighten the folds when they finished. She needed to speak with them. Again. Vicky Shesh had no doubt that the Yuuzhan Vong would soon wrest this galaxy away from the New Republic, just as the New Republic had won it from the Empire. Rapid change created opportunities. There would be a thousand worlds to govern, and Kuat might be treated better if a Kuati held a high position under the Yuuzhan Vong governors. Certainly she would fare better. The War Master reacted predictably to her report.
But he has not identified anyone as this operative?
Not according to his report, sir.
The Villip's alien face pulled its scalloped lips to one side in a sneer.
Our experience with Hutts has shown us nothing but treachery, it said. We will deal with Rhonda and his clan. You were correct in reporting him.
Vicky bowed her head silently. For an instant, she considered mentioning the news about Centerpoint. No. As soon as the Yuuzhan Vong knew Centerpoint was malfunctioning again, they might strike Coruscant. She had too much to accomplish before that day arrived.